biggest power the president has right now is the power of the bully pulpit. The hope is that by calling, if nothing else, by calling for this commission, he inspires the country to admit that we have a problem and begin solving it. The recommendations will be helpful. I think the visual of two men who are very partisan in their respective parties and seen as real opponents by the other party coming together to figure out what we can do together is important. We've started to see some conservatives come to the defense of voting rights. Bob McDonnell in Virginia, Rick Snyder in Michigan have both taken big steps. This hopefully will help us move in that direction.
Ben Jealous, president and CEO of the NAACP. And go to our website to check our report on 1 billion rising. Happy birthday to Neil Shabata. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for that.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick. Happy to be here with you. I've come out of my sort of 2 weeks of fighting a flu attack, but I wouldn't miss this show for anything. Dennis Reimars, our news director, is here.
Yes, that's you got it. Perfect. And, of course, I missed last week because of my personal affliction. So I think we're two healthy people for the first time in a while.
Didn't you say you did that shoveling snow?
Yeah, I'm not proud of it. Yeah, you always hear about this, you know, the old guy shoveling snow and he hurts his heart or his back or his legs. Well, I was that old guy. And, we've talked about this on this show many times, how when the city, I don't live in Dearborn anymore, but it's the same thing. When they clear my street, it tends to collect right at the end of my driveway. And have you ever had a problem with that where it's rock hard ice at the end of your driveway and you're chiseling away?
I just let it go.
Do you really? I can't imagine you
letting it. Wait for it to melt. I got a big honking SUV. I don't care.
Oh, boy. Boy. The opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here.
The only time I have to shovel is when the city of Dearborn comes by and plows me in.
Right.
You know, they plow the street and then they leave 4 to 8 to 10 or whatever, you know, like 3-4 times the amount of snowfall are piled up at the bottom of my drive, which I could probably blast through at, 40, 50 miles an hour. But, that's messy and there's cars across the street and so on.
Exactly.
It's amazing, but, we don't really, if you have a decent car, maybe snow tires or four-wheel drive or something, you shouldn't need all the snow plowing that the city does. And you shouldn't be so afraid of winter weather. You just have to be careful. Well, and the same thing goes with shoveling. You know, they have ergonomically bent snow shovels too, Dennis.
Sure.
They're supposedly easier on your back.
Yeah.
Just wanted to
suggest I shouldn't
that.
Use those spoons anymore. I should
no,
use some.
Right.
You know, my mother-in-law lives with us, and no jokes. So a lot of the shoveling and salting and stuff that I do is for her benefit. So I got out there and wrenched my, turned a certain way and twisted it. And I literally, this is funny, I could stand, had no problem standing. But if I tried to sit or lay down, I was in a lot of pain and literally couldn't drive because, of course, I don't know about your car, but I have to sit in mine.
Yeah. Mine's very upright.
Yeah. He's got that big honking SUV.
Stand behind the wheel.
All right.
In terms of local news and alternative views, we'll start with two stories that just don't exactly follow that, but they kind of relate to all of us in one
Definitely.
Way or the other. The first is the encounter with asteroid 2012 DA14 that's going to happen a little bit later today. Its closest point to the Earth, which will be about 17,000 or so miles, which is closer than our geosynchronous satellites. Those are the satellites out there 22,000 miles away that are circling the Earth that give us you know, the network coverage of television and HBO and Showtime and all that, and phone service, and even Classical 24 coming to WHFR overnight goes to one of those geosynchronous satellites. I think ours is Galaxy 6.
Really?
Yeah, so I hope it doesn't come close to that. But the meteor is actually going to be, and we had a discussion of the correct terms. It's an asteroid, I think. And then when it gets into our atmosphere, it becomes a meteor or a meteorite.
Depending on size, we
depending
think.
Depending on size, we think. But yes. In any event, the you can actually listen to it on the radio because you can't see it with the naked eye coming to the Earth. You can't see D8, 14 that way, and you can't see it with a telescope because it's not a comet, and so it doesn't have a tail that sort of lights up with the sun's reflection to point out where the, you know, where the beginning point is. And so you really won't be able to see it wherever you are on the planet. But our friends at the Planetary Society, which who actually provide a radio show to this station. We don't feature it every week, but often I use it at least once a month. Usually I use it at least once a month on what we call our Monday Forum here. Every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. we have special shows that we take from various internet sources, and some of them are weekly podcasts. I mean, really good radio shows unto themselves, and they're produced by one organization or the other, and they sound just like a radio show, but in fact, they are beholden to their friends who actually have radio stations like we do, and in order to get them out there. But Planetary Radio is available not only here on WHFR at least once a month during the Monday Forum, but also via iTunes podcast that you can get it for free that way, and you can go to their website. But today, live from planetary.org, which is the Planetary Society website, they got the big name Planetary. .org.
I didn't
have to toss society in there. / PlanetCast. Now, probably if you just go to planetary.org this afternoon, 2:15 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so that's, you know, keep your radio tuned to WHFR for the Highway 61 show. But then you can also listen at appropriate volume levels to the host of Planetary Radio, Matt Kaplan, and the Planetary Society Director, Bruce Betts. And they're going to do a webcam coverage of the encounter with this asteroid, which is 45 meters long, which is about whatever that is, 150 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. And it would go boom with 2.4 million tons of TNT if it hit the Earth. And it would wipe out a fairly good sized city, such as, I think we said this, somehow it came up last week, Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah. But what's the difference? What's one or more Atlantas? But,
No,
all due respect here. Isn't that the home of CNN? Well, we don't want to say anything about them. But and Coca-Cola, got to have Coca-Cola. That's their headquarters.
Is that Ted Turner's?
Ted Turner is his base headquarters there. So all good things. But anyway, this will miss us. Although one this morning hit in Russia in the Urals. Urals, that must hurt.
Yeah.
Hit in the Urals.
Oh, boy.
It actually, you mentioned there were some injuries or some.
758 people sought medical attention afterward because of breaking glass. A roof caved in, a huge 2,000 square foot roof, and then it left a 20 foot diameter crater.
And this is totally different from the DA-14. This is a smaller one.
It was 10 tons.
Only weighed 10 tons.
Only.
Yeah. Whereas DA-14 is probably quite a bit more than that.
The one in Russia this morning didn't even have a name or a number.
Yeah.
That's how little it was.
Yeah. An anonymous asteroid.
Yeah.
Strike.
It'll have one now, I'm sure.
And these can happen anytime, folks. It just pays to learn a little bit about science and to keep on track with this. I think it's interesting to me that DA-14 was actually discovered, not soon enough that we could do anything about it, but it was discovered by an amateur astronomer who, you know, does looking at the skies with a telescope in his spare time from his backyard or whatever, and actually a member of the Planetary Society.
That's cool.
He actually was a member and supported that group and their efforts to keep in touch with outer space and explore outer space. Who knows, maybe sometime in the future of this world, the planet will be saved by a volunteer astronomer.
He may not be an amateur for much longer with discoveries like this.
No, I think he's only 22, in fact.
Wow.
So he's got a career ahead of him here. And so, again, you can listen to the live webcast from, go on the internet, planetary.org/planetcast. But I'm sure they'll have a link right there on their webpage, 2:15 approximately to 3 p.m. today, Eastern Standard Time. Now, you might say we shouldn't make a comment about the State of the Union speech, but Paul Krugman here in the New York Times today has a speech about, and I know Dennis likes this connection, or at least Dennis's wife, the zombies.
My wife loves zombies.
Okay, Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist at the New York Times, has this statement about that event. And it's really not about Obama at all. And he says, the State of the Union address was not, I'm sorry to say, very interesting. True, the president offered many good ideas, but we already know that almost none of those ideas will make it past a hostile House of Representatives. I was mentioning to Dennis earlier that there's so much confirmed evidence, and as an educator myself and a person that at least took one class in psychology at college, in terms of childhood development, those first few years, like 2, 3, to 5, to 6, before traditional education would start, I'm not even talking about kindergarten here, but first grade, that sometimes doesn't start until about age 6. And all of us, parents, the society, is missing out on an important stage, a formative stage of development in our children, which can be filled with all kinds of learning and experience. And, for example, it's the best time to get a child started on learning a foreign language.
Right.
And it's the best time to get them interested in math and science and reading. And some people can afford to send their children to early education centers. It might be called daycare in some situations, but education can really take place. It can positively take place at these early ages. And as a lot of homeschooled kids and their parents know, this is a crucial and important time. So I wish that plan would go ahead. It probably won't, again, as Paul Krugman says, because the House of Representatives, having a Republican majority, they see it as government expense. Of course, it's going to pay itself back so much for the future of America.
But didn't you say this was actually in place?
Yes, it was voted in place, signed into law, we think, by Reagan.
Yes.
One of your favorite people.
Wow.
Yes, it'll cost about $10 billion a year.
Right.
It means more facilities and more teachers that have to be brought into the public institutions. Basically just making preschool education at these early levels, early ages, available to people that are too poor to pay for the sort of daycare or early education facilities for their kids themselves. So that's just one of those ideas. Absolutely good. Already was law, but the first George Bush, as soon as he got in, he said, no, you know, we're not going to do it. I'm not going to implement this.
Right.
He didn't fund it, and of course the Republicans under him didn't reinstate it, so it died. There was an awful lot of good ideas there that if you look at it from the bigger picture, the long term, it'll be good for our country. And, of course, I always said, and you know as an educator myself, I guess I've got a terrible personal bias, although I'm retired now, so I'm not getting a benefit directly out of this.
Right.
But education should be number one. Sure. Job one is not buying a Ford. I'm sorry, Ford Motor. Job one is getting your kids educated to the highest possible degree, even better than you're educated.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing to me, and it's so humbling when my parents kept saying to me, Jay, we've only finished high school. Actually, my dad didn't even finish eighth grade. My mom finished high school. My dad spent all his life working in an auto factory. But she said, the number one responsibility you have is to get an education and get to college and do better than we did.
Sure.
You know, we've got some numbers about education and high school graduates. My mother was ahead of the curve in her day, I guess, because high school graduation numbers are not all that high. They should be 100%.
Right.
Well, maybe 99.9. But everybody needs at least high school. It's your future as well as the future of this country and your kids, if you have any. you know, to get much, much more education. Certainly higher ed is really essential. Anyway, Krugman goes on here, other than the negative thing that most things won't pass. He says, you know, he says, on the other hand, the GOP reply was more interesting. It was delivered by Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. It was both, he says, interesting and revelatory. And nowhere in here does he talk about the drinking of water, because that's not important. It really isn't. He was thirsty. Of course, I think he was suffering flop sweat too, because it was actually Comedy Central actually did a number of clips showing how many times he had to wipe his brow and next to his sideburns, that he was dripping in sweat. Mm-hmm. So talk about hot lights. And by the way, I'm a TV production person, folks. There's no excuse for hot lights in the TV studio anymore. Okay, that's the 1950s lights. What the hell kind of studio was he in? Lights don't have to be hot anymore at these TV studios. But I think it was
nerves. That's exactly right.
It's sometimes referred to as flop sweat, mm-hmm. but it's just uncontrollable nerves, and you start sweating a lot. And he just reached, and I was thinking, why did he have to reach so darn far? Give him a podium. Give him a table. Just reach down, take a sip, put it back down. Give me a break. Although I don't think it should have been a brand name half water bottle. I think it should have been a really beautiful mug that's had a GOP elephant on,
sure.
or something.
Yeah.
I mean, get a logo in there, for Pete's sake.
Right.
but it was just some sort of spring water half bottle that they tossed out in there. Oh, well. Anyway, what did he say that was interesting and revelatory? And, of course, Krugman says it was interesting and revelatory in the worst way. He says, what we learned Tuesday was that zombie economic ideas have eaten his brain. In case you're wondering, Krugman goes on to say,
a
zombie idea is a proposition that has been thoroughly refuted by analysis and evidence and should be dead. Won't stay dead because it serves a political purpose, appeals to prejudices, or both. Start with the big question. How do we get into the mess we're in? The financial crisis of 2008 and its painful aftermath were a huge slap in the face for free market fundamentalists. Circa 2005, the usual suspects, conservative publications, analysts at right-wing think tanks, insisted that deregulated financial markets were doing just fine and dismissed warnings about a housing bubble as liberal whining. Then the non-existent bubble burst and the financial system proved dangerously fragile. Only huge government bailouts prevented a total collapse. Instead of learning from this experience, many on the right have chosen to rewrite history. Back then, their only complaint was that the government was getting in the way of even more mortgage lending. Now they claim that government policies were promoting excessive borrowing and causing all the problems. Every piece of this revisionist history has been refuted in detail. But the zombie keeps shambling on. And here's Rubio Tuesday night, quote, "This idea that our problems are caused by a government that was too small is just not true. In fact, a major cause of our recent downturn was a housing crisis created by reckless government policies," unquote. Yep, says Paul Krugman, it's the full zombie. What about responding to the crisis? The right thing, they claimed, Republicans claimed, was to balance the budget, even in a depressed economy. Now, this argument was obviously fallacious from the beginning. The whole reason our economy was depressed was that businesses weren't willing to invest as much as consumers were trying to save. So government borrowing would not, in fact, drive up the interest rates, and trying to balance the budget would simply deepen the depression. Sure enough, interest rates are at an historic low, and countries that slashed spending have also seen sharp job losses. This is England, this is France, this is Germany, okay? This is Italy. But the zombie, Krugman says, still shambles on. And here's Rubio, quote, "Every dollar our government borrows is money that isn't being invested to create jobs, and the uncertainty created by the debt is one reason why many businesses aren't hiring," unquote. In fairness to Rubio, Krugman concludes, what he's saying isn't any different from what everyone else in his party is saying. But that, of course, is what's so scary.
Ooh. Zombies. All right.
Yeah. Zombie ideas. I mean, yeah, we're talking facts here, folks. Does anybody pay attention to actual historical facts? I mean, just because Marco Rubio is somewhat attractive, and he's so human because he drinks water like the rest of us. Isn't that nice to know? All personal comments aside, he's factually wrong. The Republican Party is factually wrong. Now, on other issues, I could point out quite a few liberals that are factually wrong. But you know, climate change and so on, it's all factually right. It's all true, whether you want to believe it or not. It's still going to happen all around you. And, you know, sticking your head in the sand doesn't prevent you from, I don't know, dying in a tsunami or something that sweeps in over you. Okay. Now we can go back to Dearborn, and thank goodness, because that's what the show is about. But all these matters, especially truth in the media, or truthiness, as Stephen Colbert would say on Comedy Central, it really does matter, and that's why we're here. Here's the story from the Dearborn Press and Guide last Sunday. Big announcement, I guess. Mayor O'Reilly has decided to run for re-election in Dearborn.
And you say that, really, there's no surprise.
No, I think he just had to do it. I expected a bigger press announcement. We didn't even get anything from City Hall about this.
Nope.
Now, maybe they can't, because Mary Landrush works for the city, and she can't publicize the mayor running for re-election.
That would be a personal.
It would be plugging somebody who's already in office. Yeah. So that's. But he had, I guess, yesterday at the Henry, which is the Ritz-Carlton renamed, I believe.
Sure. Yeah.
The hotel here
Ritz
in Dearborn. he had $100 a plate. His first fundraising.
So you're thinking to justify it, he said, this is why we're having it.
For tax purposes, you know, so it can be a political contribution, he had to announce he was running for re-election. I guess he didn't have to take out petitions because he has not yet.
Right.
But that's only, is it 70 signatures or something?
100.
100, no, yeah. So
but you know,
it's big deal.
Only one incumbent has pulled a petition so far, and that's the city clerk.
Fill us in. You have an update from the Press and Guide.
I do, and I just wanted to say one thing. I would have thought that the mayor, do you think it would have been inappropriate to do it during a State of the City address at the end of February? Because that seems like that would have been a logical thing to me, timing-wise.
But I think it was the funding thing, since he wanted to start making money now. He must have reserved the Henry months ago.
Had to have.
So if it's part of the plan on raising money, and politicians have to have money.
That's right.
They can't, the way elections are these days, the various mailings, they do cost money. So that would be too late to wait, I think. And also there's the question, will he run really? And the longer he doesn't run, the more challengers, I think, might think, whoa, maybe he won't run, so I'll get my name in there.
Right.
So he doesn't want a lot of challengers. He doesn't want to necessarily have to do a runoff in August.
Well, according to this this article from Joe Slezak for the Press and Guide, it came out, it's dated today, dozen residents lining up for a run at Dearborn City offices, and it includes all the city offices. And he said, as of right now, the only person to pull a petition for mayor is a gentleman named Edward Binkley. He's 49 years old, and he lists his occupation as a handyman. As the article points out, it's really early in the process. Everybody has until, I think it's May 15th. May 14th.
Yes.
To do this. One person, Susan DeBaja, she's 35. She's running for city council seat. She did, in fact, she's the only one who's returned her signed petitions. But a list of the candidates, it says, that are running for city council. There's a total of 10 city council candidates. And here are the other nine. Mike Albano, we talked about him, and Maureen McElrath. They did kind of a meet and greet a week or so ago, correct?
Mm-hmm. Albano and no, McElrath wasn't part of that. It was Colleen Roberts?
Oh, no, it was Colette Richards.
Sorry,
I apologize.
Yes,
so Mike Albano and Colette Richards, they both did that. But in addition to them, an attorney, his name is Tarek Baydoun. He's 28 years old. Mm-hmm. Also, Mohammed Barrow is a realtor and recently retired Dearborn Police Corporal. Robert, I hope I get your name right. I'm sorry. Bochenek, B-O-C-H-E-N-E-K. He's a sales representative and also a retired police officer from Dearborn. Hmm. Steve Guibert, he's a business owner. Maureen McElrath, who we have, it just lists her as a CEO, which I think is interesting. But we know personally that she is the head of the Going Green Foundation.
That's right.
Yeah. Patrick Melton is a sheriff's deputy. Of course, we spoke about Colette Richards. And finally, Robert Watson is a building official.
So these people have pulled petitions, as the phrase is. They have taken them out. They've filed the fact that, I mean, they had to register their name and address probably, and then they got a petition. So whether or not they'll get the 100 signatures or whether they'll decide to turn them in or not by May 14th is still remains to be seen.
Right.
And, of course, here at WHFR Journal, we will have as many as possible of the challengers for council and the mayor's office as we can possibly schedule. And, of course, they have to agree to come on the show. But usually we give everybody, especially if there's a lot of at least 15 minutes of fame here. And
and what we might do, because there have to be, for there to be a primary runoff in August, there have to be at least double the amount of candidates for the open position. So there would have to be 4 people going for mayor, 14 people that are interested in running for city council, and so on.
Right.
I think maybe we'll wait till after. Do you think after the primary, if there is one? It's so hard because there's with this many people, we're going to have to start early.
Well, no, I think the people who are unknowns, the ones who have the more difficulty raising money, and of course we don't know them either. Dennis and I don't know most of these people.
We know one
personally.
Of them.
Yeah. Well, two. We had Albano on.
Oh, sure,
once
sure.
in the past on another issue.
Right.
On some other issues. But they need all the help they can get to get their position out there. So, no, if there's a runoff, I think we should try, and it's Dennis's job here to do this.
That's why I'm talking about waiting.
We should try to schedule these people as soon as they're willing to come on anytime after May 14th up to the election in August.
Sure. No, November.
No, the primary.
If there is one, sure, sure.
Yeah, if there August is a 6th, primary, yes. I mean, it's their call. If they say, well, I'll wait till I win the primary, and then I'll come on your show. Well, how are you going to win the primary if you don't let people know who you are?
You don't have the journal bump.
Yeah, and if they're in the primary, the problem is you almost have to campaign twice. If you're going to win the primary, you have to do a mailing to everybody in Dearborn, something glossy and cute and clever, and that's going to cost you about $30,000, $40,000 for that publication and the mailing cost at least. And then how else are you going to get your message out? I can go door to door, but of course, I should check a calendar. I think the primary in August comes after Dearborn Homecoming, so we'll see a lot of these people at Dearborn Homecoming.
Yeah, but that's August almost 6th.
That's almost too late because the just like in November, the absentee ballots and the ballots from people requesting ballots in advance, like senior citizens and people that are going to be out of town, they will go out a month ahead. So it looks like, yes, that election would be on the first Tuesday of August, which is the 6th, and Dearborn Homecoming is August 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
That precedes it. So, well, you know, you will probably see these people who are running for the primary there at Homecoming, but they need, because of the senior vote and the absentee ballots and so on, they really need to get their campaign going and get their first wave of mailings, if they can afford it at all, out by the middle of July.
Yes.
And so, or even before that, early July, first week of July, maybe the last week in June. Oh, my gosh. and of course, that means double expenses, because if they win the primary in August, then they have to do it all over again and make a bigger campaign and maybe a different kind of publication, since they're one of the remaining few, before the November election. And that has to go out by the end of September, early October, of course, for the November election. So, no, I'd like to. We've tried to do that in the past. We haven't succeeded. Some people don't want to come on the show.
Yeah.
Because we're just vicious.
Oh, yeah.
We just tear them apart.
Hardball.
Oh, yeah.
They won't know what hit them. You know, and it's interesting, based on this article, only one incumbent from any of the any of the particular offices, the city clerk, Kathleen Buda, she's the only incumbent who's at requested positions. I mean, you said that doesn't really mean anything, though.
Well,
at this point in the
game. No, not necessarily. I think because she has the name there that she is definitely got an advantage. You know, all incumbents, because you're familiar with the name, they got a majority or at least a plurality of the votes in order to get into office in the first place. So the fact that she's taken out the petition at this point and got her name in there, again, it could just be, just like I said with Mayor O'Reilly, maybe to scare away other wannabes that think, ooh, the big gun is not going to be there, and so I've got a chance to take an advantage. I thought the Dearborn Times-Herald had an interesting story right on the front page and for a paper that has a relatively conservative editorial angle. I thought it was kind of interesting that They put this story out. The revised USDA regulations result in healthier school lunches. With one semester over, and this is from Sherry Collade at the, or Collade, at the Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn Times Herald. With one semester over, Dearborn Public School students have, for the most part, smoothly transitioned into eating healthier lunches because of new federal requirements. DPS Food Services Coordinator Jeffrey Murphy said, he said, we offer a lot more fresh fruits and vegetables. Our salads are no longer iceberg lettuce, which is one of the least full of nutrients because they grow them on these huge lettuce farms.
Yeah. There is a bonus to iceberg lettuce, though. If you eat enough of it, supposedly it burns more calories to digest it than you're actually taking in because it's so...
The chewing is actually...
Yeah. And digesting. It takes up more calories.
There's some fiber. But in terms of other nutrients, no, romaine and spinach are definitely choices. He says the students are still a little bit leery of the sweet potatoes. You know, in my day, sweet potatoes were a treat.
Yeah.
Because they were sweet. And in my day, the 1950s growing up, you don't have too many of them because they're too sweet.
Right.
And now they actually have proven to have more nutrition. They're better for you than white potatoes.
Yeah, but you guys ate bacon every day, too, when you were younger.
No, I didn't. My mother did very, very healthy food that she always made at home. We never ate processed food. My parents did fall victims to the very, very first TV dinners.
Which one?
You put them in the oven, and you know, they're covered with aluminum foil.
Sure. What brand? Do you remember? Was it like a banquet back then?
Sure. Yeah, the very first ones, and they thought it was really cool, really neat. Of course, there was no food there. We were totally hungry within 5 minutes because it's very small portions, and it didn't taste very good. So,
did your parents smoke cigarettes?
Yes, unfortunately, they were heavy, heavy smokers, and my dad died a tragic, and painful death of lung cancer.
But that. Everybody smoked in the 50s. You were probably one of the few that didn't, right?
Right, yes.
I watched Mad Men, see?
Mm-hmm. There you go. So that's why most of them are dead from the 50s.
It has nothing to do with their old age, right?
No.
Right, go ahead.
Cigarettes did
it. You believe whatever you want.
Yeah. I just want to point this out, you know, because some people, and maybe some of the folks listening to shows, you're always supporting liberal causes. No, I'm not. I'm for a lot of conservative libertarian causes, too. I'm all over the board, I guess. You could say inconsistent, but I think I'm consistent for each particular issue, you know, and I think that we live in a very complex world, but who could be against more fresh vegetables, fruits, and whole grains? To actually require this to be fed to our kids rather than high starch, high sugar processed food that has no nutrition. Doesn't that just make sense? And isn't it terrible, though? Okay, this is the tragedy, that it has to be a federal government program in order for it to happen locally. You know, where are our, you know, I mean, if the local schools would have done it first, you wouldn't have needed the federal government program to do this.
It could have been a catalyst on a bigger scale.
But all the local teachers and principals, the parents don't want it, the kids don't want it, we can't do it. It's the right thing to do. You're either educators or you're not, okay? You either know the right way to educate, which means also to properly teach nutrition to kids about what is healthy eating, or you're not an educator. You're not a true administrator for an educational program. So in this case, and for sake of consistency, thank you very much, federal government, for putting these regulations in place. Mm-hmm. It was the right thing to do. And if the kids are not used to eating healthy food at home, maybe this will give them an idea. And shame on you folks at home. You say, well, it's all I can afford is, you know, processed meat. I understand that, but believe it or not, and where can you get the information? You can inexpensively, less expensive than buying processed food or microwave dinners or whatever, get real food. It's just that we've lost the knowledge of how to cook it,
Sure. Unfortunately.
And I don't even have the time to cook it. Where was that Rachel Ray show that she started with?
30 minutes.
30-minute meals, and she got 14 courses in 30 minutes. Of course, she had a lot of it pre-prepared, Sure. Pre-chopped, but still.
You can do that, too.
I wish people would teach that. I mean, in my day, oh, my God, here's that old person again.
Oh, here we go.
We not only had shop classes for boys and girls.
But home ec.
Where you could fix things. You could fix electrical things like, you know, changing a light bulb. No, for, more than that, changing the wiring and sockets and so on. And you said, oh, you need a license for that. But I mean, they taught you the proper approaches to safety and how to use hammers and nails and, you know, DIY, do it yourself. It was actually taught in the high school. And then, yes, there were home ec classes. And I'm sorry to say, a lot of boys didn't take those.
Or they weren't required?
Because they were cooking classes.
Huh.
No, they could take them, but they weren't required. So, gosh. Like, the shop class wasn't required, but everybody did have to take either shop or home ec.
Right.
So it's true that there was more boys than girls in shop and more girls than boys in home ec.
Sure.
And that's too bad because, you know, cooking, and more than that, what are you cooking? You know, of course, if you are cooking, you're probably cooking fresh food and vegetables. You're not just turning on the oven for microwave dinner.
Right.
So,
not in the 50s anyway.
Right. Though. Yeah. So I'm just saying that this is all good. This is wonderful. Yes, this is a front page story. And I'm glad the Times Herald has it there. It's a follow up on what's been happening with their school lunches here in Dearborn. But if nobody else would do it, then thank goodness the federal government has these guidelines.
Everybody, a lot of news in the papers lately have been regarding the length of time kids go to school. The one young lady wrote a wonderful editorial about going to school. Kids need to go to school a little bit later so they get more sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. All of these different, but you're right. What we put in our bodies that fuels us has been overlooked. I just have to say one thing. Don't you agree that some of the healthiest foods taste good too? That's always been something with kids. But if it's healthy, it can't taste good.
Well, if you cook them right.
If you cook it right, exactly.
My mother made vegetables all the time.
Every day.
And I went to school and I told my friends, I love my mother cooks spinach, my mother cooks asparagus, she cooks Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. And they said, that's all slimy and mushy. And I'm thinking,
no.
How do your parents cook
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
You know,
just boiling it to them?
Yeah. I mean, you're supposed to like steam vegetables, sure. But tender not crisp. Until it gets mushy
right.
at all. I think if you're cooking pasta, it's like al dente or
yeah,
something, which
philosophy.
Is just barely soft, you know, something to chew there, not all mush. So a good cook, and these are cooking lessons, folks,
sure.
as well as healthy food lessons, can actually make, can bring out the flavor that's already in these things.
My mom used to call it tender crisp. That's how she liked her vegetables.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I loved all vegetables. Why? Because my mother cooked them fresh and cook them in a way that didn't destroy them,
right?
You know, and so there's no reason that kids wouldn't like fresh fruits and vegetables.
Exactly.
Oh, and every night for a snack, what did we have after dinner? We
chips.
Had a piece of fresh fruit.
Oh.
Fruit. That was our snack at night, and I still do that. So it saves you all the calories of all the. Sure, sometimes we ate potato chips, but it was rare that you know what was for dessert. You know, not candy, not cake, not cookies. What kind of fruit do you want?
Really,
you know, we had apples, pears, oranges.
Sure.
Peaches, what do you want? It wasn't, sometimes we had it out of cans, but usually we tried to buy fresh, whatever was fresh and local at that time. You know, nowadays, in those days, in the 50s, in the winter, you wouldn't get much local because it's not the growing season in Michigan for
right.
fruit. And so we would get more canned things here. Now you can get fresh fruit from, I don't know, South America in the middle of winter here.
Right.
And of course, traveling all that way, there is something lost. There is some freshness, some nutrients. Just that's the way it goes.
Contributes to global warming, sure.
Well, yeah, the overall cost of the gasoline and the oil that's burned in order to get them here. So we're going to just take our usual break about a little bit half past the hour of the new WHFR Journal for Friday. That is the 15th of February. That is today. And let you listen to a couple of commentaries from Jim Hightower. The first one is a massive battle here going on between Monsanto, and they are Michigan-based.
Sure.
Say yes to Michigan.
Yeah.
And Mother Nature. Remember her? And the second one is a crucial issue, too, about the feeding of Bush's puppy. Okay, listen close.
If you fool with Mother Nature, she'll most likely fool with you, usually in very unpleasant ways. Monsanto, the biotech profiteer, keeps rediscovering this reality, but never seems to learn from it. For more than a decade, it has aggressively pushed its genetically altered corn and soybean seeds on American farmers. Called Roundup Ready, the seeds have had their genes altered specifically so the resulting corn plants and soybeans can tolerate heavier doses of an herbicide called Roundup. Who makes this weed killer? Monsanto. So its Franken seeds are really nothing but a marketing scheme to sell and spread more pesticide. But Roundup kills those pesky weeds, so farmers gain, right? Wrong. Monsanto's bio-tampering fooled Mother Nature briefly, but Mom has fought back. Several weeds have mutated to become immune to Roundup. For farmers, coping with these new super weeds has already become a billion-dollar-a-year nightmare, and they're spreading like, well, like super weeds. As reported by Tom Philpott of MotherJones.com, a 31-state survey of farmers found that half of them now have Roundup-immune weeds in their fields. Some states are especially hard hit. Infested acreage doubled in Iowa, Indiana, and Nebraska last year, and 92% of Georgia farmers say they now have the weeds. But Monsanto, having learned nothing, is peddling yet another bio-scheme to fool Mother Nature. Called Next Generation, these are re-altered seeds that let farmers dump super-toxic pesticides on the super-weeds. This is Jim Hightower saying, great, let's spread more poisonous and more costly poisons on our food. Then Mother Nature will evolve and proliferate even more super-super-weeds. As organic and sustainable farmers are showing, it's far better to cooperate with Mother Nature than foolishly trying to sledgehammer her. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org. Guess what? George Bush is back! Not Poppy Bush, as George H.W. was known, nor the George known simply as W. Rather, farther down the family tree, a brand new Bush is trying to use his powerful family name and connections to sprout a career in the rich soil of right-wing Texas politics. Meet George P. Bush, already dubbed Puppy. Son of former Florida Governor Jeb, this 36-year-old has been a corporate lawyer, a private equity hustler, and is presently in energy investments. But lately, George P. has been working the family Rolodex for his fledgling effort to grab the statewide office of land commissioner. He has already sacked up about $1.4 million, a wad of startup cash that would have been impossible to get if his name was George P. Bust. Practically all of this bankroll came from family, including $50,000 from Uncle W., or from special interest donors long tied to the Bush political network, including donations of $10,000 to $65,000 each from seven Texas oil operators and assorted far-right-wing billionaires. Among his billionaire backers are Bob Perry, a Houston-based housing developer, and Harold Simmons, a Dallas-based waste disposal baron. Both dumped tens of millions of dollars into the GOP's ferociously negative attack ads against Barack Obama last year. Also, both are infamous pay-to-play corporatists who like to buy into up-and-coming politicians who can be trusted to deliver governmental favors to them over the long haul. So it's not for nothing that they are the two biggest donors nourishing young Bush's run for this little-known Texas office. This is Jim Hightower saying, George P. has the pure Bush pedigree and is already on the corporate leash. One watchdog group tracing the money interest feeding and training this pup is Texans for Public Justice. Find them at tpj.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 15th, 2013. Remember to duck this afternoon as the asteroid comes by. Okay. Planetary.org/planetcast. Yes. A couple of other stories here from local Dearborn sources. This one is from the Press and Guide website just today, Dennis.
That's
right. Yeah. Okay. District plans online summer school during Ramadan. Ramadan keeps creeping up earlier and earlier every year, but that's the way they count the years, and that's their business, of course. So Dearborn Public Schools looking ahead to July and how to draw more middle schoolers into summer school programs to help them catch up while still observing Ramadan. Okay, I thought that the observance, as it says here, calls for Muslim adults and older children to abstain from all food and water during daylight hours. That often means that families are up late and early to eat and drink while it's dark out. So, and I don't know how middle school students, I guess that must be the borderline age.
It is. My daughter actually went to Dearborn Public Schools, and she had many Muslim friends, and she would take part in this to the degree that she could just to kind of show support. And it is very difficult not to eat. I mean, you're talking about, mm-hmm. especially when everybody around you. So I really applaud this decision to do the, you know, with taking this into consideration for summer schools. I really
do. Of course, right now, I mean, practicing Christians are observing Lent.
Since last Wednesday?
Yeah, and that goes on a month.
Yeah, 40 days.
Actually kind of similar, except you can eat during the day. You just have to restrict. You have to sort of pledge to restrict something. You're going to give something up for Lent, as
they
say.
Sure, give it up for Lent as a sacrifice.
So, you know, give up dessert. Oh, isn't that tough? You know, and still stuff your face with everything else.
But. Well, and of course, on Fridays, most Catholics give up meat. And that's, from what I understand, and
that's a very old time observance, and it's nothing official about it.
There is nothing official about it.
Nope, no more. Uh-uh.
Okay, but back, you were talking about in the '50s. Mm-hmm. I was led to believe that there were some practicing Catholics that would not eat meat on Fridays at all, regardless of whether it was during Lent or not. Have you ever heard of
right.
that?
Well, it was more, as I said, a church practice. That,
okay,
that's why macaroni and cheese became so big.
Oh yeah.
And as well as fish.
And salmon patties.
Although some people, vegetarians, would say fish is meat.
Sure.
There is flesh there from a living creature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but who knows how these things get started. You just have to sort of respect them and go along with it. And that's what the Dearborn Public Schools are doing. So what are their suggestions here? Are they going to keep schools open at night so they can eat and drink all night long? No. They're going to try a blended program mm-hmm. of in-school and online learning. So students will start the program with a few hours spent each day at school, but then for a few weeks, the program will move online. So I hope they have computers. Students will go do their work via computer, either at home, aha, or by visiting the school libraries in the late mornings or afternoons. Teachers will still be available to help and answer emails. Each library will be staffed by a media specialist, a certified teacher who can provide assistance. I thought they fired all their media specialists.
I guess they're bringing them back for the summer program.
I guess they're re-identifying a few janitors or something as media specialists. Oh, no, seriously, they have cut back so much on media resources in the schools and teachers that I don't even know how they have, you know, the ability to pull this off, but I guess they're going to try anyway. And, of course, this special program may or may not be available to all the students who have to go in the summer, but they think they're going to try to accommodate up to 1,000 students through the new summer school program. Of course, Kornick has to make the comment, why did they need summer school? Okay, why can't they get their learning in the regular year? Is somebody not paying attention? Well, no disrespect here, but there's still English as a second language problems. I've mentioned that the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And as was pointed out, just for your reference, I'm sure you all who are listening, subscribe and get your own personal copies of the Dearborn Times Herald and Dearborn Press and Guide. There's actually two stories that relate to it. But the one is that reading scores are down. That all of statewide testing program shows that Dearborn Elementary students are not doing as well as last year or the year before with reading. Okay? And, of course, it doesn't say in the story, but you have to figure that the large percentage of non-foreign-born families, not necessarily students, but if the families learn, don't speak English as a native language, as their first language, so-called, then, and if they don't speak that language in the home, then their children, who might have been born in this country and go to our schools, but they're not going to be as comfortable with English either reading or writing. And so that's a big deal problem of the issues. Sort of a segue to another issue. So good for Dearborn that they're working out this program. We'll see if online instruction is good. I've spent over a decade as sort of a telecommunications distance learning liaison for the president of the college here at Henry Ford. And the result of all that time spent was that, number one, we weren't doing as much as other schools. But number two is an awareness that online instruction is not for everyone.
No.
If you're not highly motivated, it sounds like you have some experience.
Yeah, I do.
And you come in at the proper entry level, such as reading and writing, because online means what? You're staring at a computer screen. Is it talking to you? Are you talking back to it? No, most of the time you're reading words from the screen and you are typing in, writing in, therefore, responses.
Right.
And the tests are all English-based. And so, unless they have testing for this program in Arabic, I don't know, online is primarily English-based. Now, that will help them, but it'll be a struggle, too, to do that. So what was your experience with online instruction?
I personally found that you have to not only have motivation, but you have to have a level of discipline. Because as my Mr. Ringel, my online history teacher here, said, I'm going to give you enough rope to hang yourself. And what he meant by that is the assignments are due when they're due. You have like a week to do them. And if you wait till the last minute, you know, what happens when you wait till the last minute on a project? It tends to suffer.
Things
right?
can happen. Yeah. Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law. So did I personally? No, I did really well actually here. I was a very dedicated student, but I have a lot of friends that didn't do as well because they didn't have that level of discipline. I just wanted really quickly the story regarding the Ramadan. This isn't about, the kids don't get to eat during the day, so their scores and their grades are going to suffer. No, they're talking about because they're eating when it's dark, they tend to be home longer or they're up later and doing things. So this is just a way to accommodate the schedules just for that. I think it's 30-day period of time, correct? Ramadan is 30
right.
days. Okay.
Something like that, yes.
All right.
Okay.
But the segue we were doing, I know that we had something regarding graduation rates.
Well, the graduation rates are up in Dearborn. So a little bad news there about not doing as well with reading and writing. But graduation rates are up 6.5% in Dearborn Public Schools. And that might seem like a good, healthy improvement. But when I turn the page to read the end of the article, and this was from DearbornPatch.com, and it's not in the paper yet, probably next week. Boy, we do this fast-breaking stories on the radio.
I know, this is awesome.
Papers are so jealous of us. But Patch always gets it pretty early here, too, because they actually are real reporters. They go out and they dig for it. Imagine, Dennis, digging for stories.
Jessica Carreras?
Yes.
She puts out a couple stories a day. Mm-hmm. She is a prolific writer.
Right. I'm sure she has a number of topics each day that she prepares, and then she has to do further research. But you sort of have to plan ahead for stories, too.
Especially considering the cuts they have in their staff. She's almost the only one writing. I think there's one or two other people.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So here's the graduation rate of Dearborn Public Schools this year. It is 82.5%. So that's not good, folks. Mm-hmm. I know it's up. Yeah, it's up there, whatever,
6.5%.
But for Pete's sake, this other 17%, what's happening to them?
Dropouts.
Where are they going? And you might say, there are, it doesn't count them appropriately. But this year, and maybe this is why the percent has increased, they've done something interesting in terms of the count. They're trying to accommodate students like transfer or go elsewhere or whatever. So students are divided into cohorts. That's right, C-O-H-O-R-T-S. Now, that's a combination of students who begin ninth grade in the district 4 years prior and include students who transferred in or are within the four-year period. So for 2012 graduates, the cohort includes students who began high school in Dearborn in 2008 or transferred into the district before 2012 graduation. Now, the state also tracks students who were off track. That's cute. They track students who were off track. How can you track a student who is off track? Well, anyway, they track those students who were off track for a four-year graduation. Seems like that should be impossible. But continuing their education. Okay, so in other words, they didn't make the usual 18 or 19 year old graduation, but they're still sort of trickling in, and sort of like on TV show Glee, there's all those graduates who are still wandering through the halls, you know. And,
I've never seen even 5 minutes of that show.
Yeah,
I should though, right?
One of them failed and had to be held back. I think it was Brittany. No disrespect to your daughter who's named that, but
I don't. Yeah, let's not go there. Anyway,
so it includes those who graduated or dropped out past the four-year mark and those who completed their GED or reached the maximum special ed age, which means you can stay there in high school as long as you can, but you'll never get a degree, depending on your special ed.
I thought 19
disability.
Was the...
I don't know what the age is.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're trying to have a little bit more accurate way of talking about graduation rates because, but still in Detroit, even allowing for that, less than half the students graduate. And that just seems like they are doomed. I've said this before, doomed. How could you let that happen to yourself, to your child, to your grandchild? How could you let that happen, not getting a high school education? What kind of future? I can't imagine. I mean, in the 1950s, I'm going to this little dink school in Flat Rock, Michigan, okay? 10% of the class didn't graduate. But only 10%. This is, okay, at the bottom edge of Wayne County and a lot of farming kids, you know, right. Then in those days. And it wasn't, there were some families like my dad working in the factory and that. But even there, 90% graduated. How can that be possible? You know, did they not have a lot of distractions? Actually, we felt sorry, and I personally knew the 10%, because there was only like 110 of us all together anyway,
right.
Graduating. They actually had, you know, human tragedies, like their father died or something and had wow. to go to work early to support the rest of the family. You know, get a job at a gas station. That won't help you today, you know.
Right.
And so they had some options, but they were sad about it. None of them wanted to drop out. Because they knew they had no future.
Right.
They knew that they were doomed always to have this third, fourth-rate existence. This was in the 50s. Where is this awareness gone? In the days of all the media and the media culture, what does it lead them into this false hope that everything will happen for them, even if they don't try, even if they don't stay in school? Okay. I thought school was tremendously fun in those days, and the way my daughter has to do it today in Southfield Public Schools is not fun for her.
No.
Required teaching to tests. I can't go into the latest story because it's just too pathetic about what she was told, about what she had to teach for the next 2 weeks. But from a principal. Okay, I'll just.
Yep, you have to now.
Yeah, I have to. The principal came in and observed her and said, yeah, well, you're teaching just fine. That's fine. But you ought to have some movies to supplement. Now, she's teaching seventh grade, and she's teaching about layers of atmosphere and atmospheric pressure. It's a meteorology thing, and it's required somehow by their curriculum. It wasn't her choice, but you know, there's principles of physics you can get into about weather and geometry. And the teacher says, you should show clips from a movie, get their interest, called The Core, or Voyage Beneath the Earth, the Jules Verne thing. What was that?
20,000
Leagues Under. No, that's a submarine story.
Sure.
It's the one where they actually walk down into the earth through a volcano.
I remember it, sure.
Yeah, Pat Boone starred in it and James Mason in the first version. But anyway, and she tried to point out, and The Core is a horror film. It's a really scary, and she believes, and I believe, it's an R-rated horror film. You go down deep into the earth, and there's all these young kids, teenagers, having fun. And these monsters, creatures, of course, are carnivorous, and they zap people, and they eat them up, and they, you know, it's just horrific. And she just gently, she feels both of them are irrelevant, totally irrelevant, because, not the horror aside, she's teaching about above the earth, and his two examples talk about below the earth, even though neither is accurate. We don't know of any carnivorous species that are eating spelunkers.
Journey to the center of the earth.
That's the name of it, the Jules Verne story. Yeah. But even that, it's got mushrooms growing upside down and stuff. I mean, it's just talk about science. There's none of that in there.
It's fiction.
Whoa, you can make it more interesting by showing the core. Yeah, more interesting. But completely irrelevant. First of all, I'm talking about above the ground. But number two, and the principal was bragging, well, you know, that was my major, math and science. Well, what decade was it? Was it the 19th century? You know, and she was very nice because she was being observed, because now teachers, even like her with 14 years of experience, have to be observed every year. And for no reason, because there's no teacher tenure anymore, she could just be fired if the principal doesn't like her.
Right.
So here's a principal that obviously, for this example, doesn't know science.
Well, so did this, you made it sound like it was a suggestion. Was this a mandate that she has to show movies over the next 2 weeks?
No, it was just a suggestion. And she just gently pointed out is that she was dealing with above the ground, and those two wonderful films deal with
wonderful.
Below the ground. And
that's awesome.
Oh, dear. I mean, she does try to find, pop movies. They don't have much internet connection in Southfield Public Schools. She can't go on the internet to too many sources. And the kids basically can't read English very well. And remember, over half of her class is special ed, and she's not special ed certified. And the school has laid off most of the special ed people that were even assisting. So with special ed, these kids, I call them kids in a wonderful, cherished way, not only can they not read or write at the standard levels, but on top of that, they're emotionally challenged in violent ways. And this is a majority of our 40-person overloaded classroom. Throwing chairs, tables, punching kids out and or the teacher every day happens. It happens. This is what she's facing.
Right.
And, you know, that's hopefully not the way it is in Dearborn Public Schools, but there's a lot of things wrong with that. And it's good that graduation rates are up in Dearborn, even by these new criteria, which automatically would boost the numbers. But where are the 17% we're losing?
Well, the first thing you said when we talked about this before the show was, why aren't 100% graduating?
And the worst high school percentage out of the three mm-hmm. is Edsel Ford. They're at 79%.
No kidding. That's where my kids went.
They're in the middle of the town. You can't say, well, it's because of Eastsiders or
right.
Westsiders.
Right.
They're in the middle of the town. What's wrong with the Edsel Ford kids or their faculty? Why are they dropping out so high?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
And you're right. Fordson traditionally has the English as a second language. Usually that's where it falls in because of the vast majority of people that are just over
that's
here.
That's the usual thought.
Exactly. So. Edsel Ford apparently has other issues.
Yeah, it can't just be personal tragedies in the families. You know, it has to be something else going on there.
So. I agree. Maybe it's the school. But I got to tell you, I was really happy with my kid's education. Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, my daughter went to Edsel Ford. So.
Yeah, and you met my daughter, and it is what it is. Anyway, we have a couple of events.
And we only have like 3 minutes before Highway 61 gets here. This is WHFR Dearborn, but we're going to keep talking. Joanne Korchinska is in the house.
We saw
ready to start the best in the blues for the next 4 hours.
Yep.
Did you want to hit some of these? I'm just going to go down my list. First of all, real quick, the Arab American International Festival might be moving off of Warren Avenue. That isn't decided, but it looks like there is some give and take with the city, and that it might go to Ford Woods Park, which is northeast corner of Ford Road and Greenfield, right. More contained area. Businesses on Warren probably wouldn't prefer that, but
it's no secret there have been some issues the last couple of festivals.
Yeah, in terms of police control now, if it's in that park, is Wayne County going to be able to come in and police it, or is Dearborn going to do
that's
it?
That's what I'm thinking.
Wayne County might come in as they did the last 2 years and provide the police support for Warren Avenue because that's a county street,
sure.
A county road.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to get them to come in and take responsibility for Ford Park.
I wouldn't think so.
I think
either.
That's got to be the. So there's going to be a cost there for the Dearborn Police to put on the extra officers or reassign them, just like they do during homecoming.
And I've always felt part of the whole thing that I like about this festival is that it's right in the heart of East Dearborn. It's really
the shops, the stores, the businesses.
The smells are incredible. It's just I like that ambient.
Yeah. Ambience. Well, we'll see how that goes. Looking down my list here, what else can we talk about?
Can I throw this out there really
quick? Okay, yes.
Tomorrow, February 16th at 7 p.m. to midnight, it is the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
Cool Cat Casino Night.
Thank you, yes.
So if you want to legally gamble away your funds for the good of the animals.
It's at the O'Kelly Banquet Hall, 23663 Park Street in Dearborn. That's 23663 Park Street. $30 in advance or $35 at the door. They're going to have Texas Hold'em, Blackjack, Let It Ride. I don't gamble. I don't know what that is. A bountiful luau donated by Del Taco, open bar, live entertainment provided by the Avenue Dance Company.
And finally, if we can find it, what are the animals that you cannot own in Dearborn? The city council has gotten busy. They have done something. You can't say that our elected officials aren't busy. So now they have, it's part of a list of animals that require a permit or are unlawful to be kept as pets in the city of Dearborn.
The list of animals that you can have is much shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So here it goes. This is an amendment to the animals chapter of the city code. According to the memo sent to city officials by the legal department on behalf of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, shelter officials made the request to add a list of fad pets, which the city says become a burden and are then abandoned at the animal shelter. These animals are not conducive to city life, and those animals are, so add this to the list that you may already know about, other exotic wild or dangerous animals.